Friday, June 21st, and this is Idaho Matters. Hi, I'm George Prentice in for Gemma Gaudette. It is Friday, time for our reporter roundtable, where we get you up to date on all the news that made headlines in our region. And joining us live in studio today are Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Press, Seth Ogilvy with Idaho Public Television, and Bill Menny, also with Idaho Public Television. Gentlemen, hello.
How's it going, George?
Very well. I would like to start with an issue that we will probably have debated and will be debating for years to come. That said, Idaho's minimum wage is worth plenty of conversation, Scott, and you and your team took a deep dive.
Right. The effort is underway to get enough signatures to get the minimum wage increase on the ballot. There's a group of organizers that qualified to petition, and they're now in the process of seeking signatures. So you might be out there at an event, the Garth Brooks concert, and you might see some folks out there with clipboards asking you to sign a petition to put this measure on the ballot. The measure would increase Idaho's minimum wage from the current federal level at $7.25, mm-hmm. which we've been at for the past decade. And if it is passed at the ballot, the minimum wage would immediately go to $8.75 an hour in the first year. And then after that, it would go up to $9.75. And then the year after that, $10.75. And then the year after that, it would go up to $12. And then at that point, when it hits $12 an hour in four years, it would be tied to the consumer price index, so inflation. So the cost of living, if cost of living goes up, the minimum wage would go up. And so they are currently out gathering signatures. In the past decade, 26 states have raised their minimum wage.
Many of them are neighbors.
Yes, absolutely. And we are, among the lowest. Idaho, Wyoming, and Utah, we are all still at $7.25 an hour. Nevada raised its minimum wage to $8.25. Oregon, $10.75. Montana is at $8.50. And Washington, the state of Washington, is at $12 an hour. And so we took an in-depth look at the issue and a lot of the studies. And most of the studies that are coming out about the raising of minimum wage show that it has had net benefits. Now, the $15 an hour raise in Seattle started out kind of rough, and it seems like vulnerable or sensitive businesses that were not able to pass along increased costs to their customers or had lower profit margins did indeed suffer. But now that we have more time with the minimum wage increase in Seattle, we're seeing that there are ending up being a net benefit of overall wages, lower turnover rates, higher quality of life issues.
Do we have a sense of the initiative of how successful they are, especially in the shadow of how successful the Medicaid initiative was? I'm certain that this is a grassroots effort.
It is. And I think and there's actually a lot of overlap. There's some of the same folks who were working on Medicaid expansion are working on this as well. This seems to be much quieter. And I know that they have a longer window. I think they have a horizon of 2020. So they're not saying we want to get this done and get it on the ballot in August or November of this year. I think they're taking their time and taking the long view on this.
And 2020 has all kinds of shadows that would cast onto that.
There's no big political events going on there.
There's every political event.
Yeah, and I don't know. You know, we didn't talk to them about the motivations for that and whether there's any sort of synergies going on with that, but it's certainly possible.
Well, it's interesting to see this conversation moving out of the legislature. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've kind of heard this for decades now, leading pretty much right after the last minimum wage increase happened, where people have been talking about this. But the talk within the legislature has always been, we've got a really low cost of living in Idaho. The minimum wage being raised here isn't quite as important as it is in other places. Recently, with housing prices going up and with apartments rentals going up, we're starting to see some pretty dramatic numbers where our cost of living, when you compare it to our average wages throughout Idaho as a whole, not just Boise, is on par with places like Seattle, San Francisco, some of the places where you think they're having huge problems when it comes to being able to afford to live there. Mm-hmm. So I think issues like that is what's kind of leading to this conversation being pulled out of the legislature, because people are starting to feel it now.
Scott, do you have any sense for what actual share of low-income Idahoans actually make the minimum wage? And because, you know, you listen to Governor Little and other people talk, and the effective minimum wage obviously is somewhere above $7 an hour just because of the competition for workers. What percentage of people actually make minimum wage in Idaho?
Well, it's really not a lot, and I'm trying to find the numbers.
Especially with such a low unemployment rate, exactly. And there isn't a day that we don't drive around the Treasure Valley and see literally signs on billboards that say now hiring $10 an hour.
Yeah, and if there's not a better time for labor to get a good wage, I mean, this would be the ultimate time for negotiating.
So in Idaho, it's 16,000 Idahoans make $7.25 or less. That was in 2017. About 58,000 made $8.75 or less an hour. So, you know, 20 to 60,000 people fall in that.
Those
that
are certainly
area.
Joined at the hip, right?
Yeah, and you know, the argument as well is that with our low unemployment, a lot of businesses, the market is to some extent taking care of this because you don't have a lot of people, and we have improved. We used to be something like fifth or fourth in the nation in percentage of workers earning the minimum wage, and now we're 20th in just the past few years. So there is indication that we are improving, and to some extent the market is fixing the problem. I think the question for the organizers in particular is it fast enough and is it enough?
Excellent.
And I'm just kind of curious because as we see the economy kind of changing in Idaho with a lot of people moving into tech, but we still have the agricultural circles, how much the undocumented folks that are a lot of the people who work those jobs in both dairies, in the farms, things like that, how many of them are actually getting minimum wage? I mean, how much of that is kind of driving down the entire median income of the folks in Idaho here?
We're speaking with Scott McIntosh with Idaho Press, Seth Ogilvie with Idaho Public Television, and Bill Manny also with Idaho Public Television. We would love to hear from you. You can communicate with us via email at Idaho Matters, all one word, Idaho Matters at boisestate.edu. On Twitter, use the hashtag Idaho Matters, or you can visit us on our Facebook page. Let's talk a little politics. This time next week, the Idaho State GOP has their summer meeting. And a very familiar name threw his hat in the ring to be the possible next head of that party. And so who wants to jump in here?
Well, two very familiar names. Two people that I think were both
very
well.
One we were pretty sure, Tom Luna, absolutely. But then?
Well, and then just recently, former Congressman Raul Labrador got into the race.
Absolutely.
Who must be having a little bit of fear because the last time he was sitting chairing a Republican convention was the fabled Moscow convention that ended up with just people yelling at each other. Nothing got done and everyone kind of leaved unsatisfied. So the flashbacks might be coming to him right now.
Right. The question is, why would you want such a thankless job? And do we have any sense for why he would want that? I mean, you've been in the legislature, you've been in Congress. This is not exactly a stepping stone to higher public office.
And I called him up, this would have been 2 or 3 weeks ago when I was trying to run this down when the rumors were just out there. And he just gave me a no comment, no comment, no comment. But I was asking kind of the same questions. It's not a good wage. It's not really a good stepping stone, as you saw with Steve Yates, who ran for lieutenant governor and lost to Janice McGee. And it wasn't necessarily that stepping stone that you'd think it would be.
But that also said, we mentioned the 2020 election, and he has said that his intention is to do everything possible to help reelect President Trump.
And
could be the main motivation.
He has been undaunted in his support of President Trump before and during the 2016 election, and he made his statement all about supporting Trump and getting him reelected. However, it's not probably a big doubt in Idaho.
I don't think that's at risk, really. And the head of the party in Idaho technically should be the governor, and he ran against Brad Little. I mean, it does seem like that's going to be an interesting dynamic with the head of the party and the head of the party not necessarily seeing eye to eye and kind of rivals
and
on that.
And how that room splits.
Exactly.
Next week, Luna versus Labrador.
But then on the other side, when you have a governor who wants to be the education governor, being connected with someone like Tom Luna might be a little bit problematic because a lot of people do think about Props 1, 2, and 3, mm-hmm. the famed Luna laws, when they think of Tom Luna, for better or worse. And does the person who's trying to tout himself as the education governor really want that person in charge of his party? So I think when it comes, it's going to be a complicated relationship for the governor with either of these people.
The other thing that I wonder about is, you know, Luna versus Labrador. They're fairly friendly. You know, they've been allies in the past. They do not – have never struck me as political opponents. And so is that going to be a friendly competition or
– Have you seen one yet?
I'm just surprised at how it's all playing out.
Excellent. Okay, we're going to take a break here. By the way, we want to talk a little bit more politics in our next break. A former lawmaker – making a bit of news. He's on the current Idaho Tax Commission. And, of course, we're talking about former Senator Elliot Work. We'll address that and much more on Idaho Matters. We'll get back to our reporter roundtable with Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Press, Seth Ogilvie with Idaho Public Television, and Bill Manny with Idaho Public Television. Just a couple of minutes ago, I was referring to Elliot Work, former state senator representing the Boise area and appointed to the Idaho Tax Commission. What is going on here? He was put on administrative leave.
Yeah.
That's about all we know.
There we go. Okay, next story.
About a month.
Yeah, so we saw that he was on administrative leave. We asked around. Betsy Russell asked around, and no one would tell her why. Personnel issue. And then last week he was he posted on his Facebook page, "I'm back at work." And no comment as to why he was on administrative leave or what brought him back, you know, just no word. We have no idea.
Can we just talk – so we'll put that to the side, but can we talk in general nature and our collective experiences of reporting on public figures who have been placed on administrative leave? It's very, very difficult to find out what happened because it's a personal
matter.
Well,
and at that level, it's awfully rare too. I mean, yeah. Besides that, this is, you know, the state of ship is pretty leaky and usually know, you know, even if you don't actually know the specifics, you usually know kind of what was going on. In this case, I don't think anybody knows. If and Seth follows state stuff more closely than I do, maybe he's heard, but nobody knows. And that seems really rare that you don't even know kind of the outlines or the suggestions of what was going on.
But there is recently kind of precedence for that when it came to Dan Goikuchea. We didn't really find out what happened there until after the fact. I mean, to the point where the superintendent of public instruction knew nothing and actually gave him a job after he was on administrative leave for certain, like, sexual harassment, certain violations within the controller's office. So there has been the ability to keep these things under wraps. I'm not implying that that's necessarily what happened with Elliot Work. We really don't know what happened with Work. You'd figure if it was something mundane, like he went fishing, he'd probably just come out and tell us that. So it's probably something at least a little bit more interesting than a vacation.
Well,
but not to say that maybe like.
And it's not disclosed for a reason, you know, because if somebody doesn't like Elliot Work and, you know, a disgruntled employee or something can make any sort of accusation, could accuse him of sexual harassment or of a hostile workplace.
And then there's a process.
And so, and then that goes into the process of reviewing those allegations. And the way the state operates is that you know when you have allegations of any sort, they put the person on administrative leave while they investigate. Now at the end of that investigation, if there's nothing wrong and they find that these accusations were unfounded or erroneous, then no harm, no foul. Now they're back at work. And so I think it's secret for a reason, because if there's some sort of allegation and it gets out and it turns out that it was just meant to malign the person, then you've done damage to that person's reputation. And so that's why they put these under personnel issues and won't disclose what's going on.
And that's totally spot on. And I think the next step would be, like, if something did happen, it'd be in the case of like Dan Goikuchea, you wait for a lawsuit to come, mm-hmm. or you wait for a criminal charge to come or something along those lines. And if those don't come, I mean, I guess, you know, innocent until proven guilty, we have to give Senator Work the benefit of the doubt and say, like, hey, this is his business.
Yeah, personnel is one of the handful of perfectly legitimate exemptions to the Idaho Public Records Law. But when I worked in Oregon, you could appeal. You could argue that the public interest outweighed the personnel exemption. And I think one could argue that understanding why one of our state's top tax officials had to be removed from work for up to a month is a legitimate public question. Now, whether you could win a court case on that, I don't know. But I think, you know, people are going to want to know, and they're going to assume the worst. And like Scott says, maybe we can hope that the worst in this case was not the truth.
Let's talk about something that was described as clear as mud this week. Scott, let's talk about the effort to put a vote on the ballot in the city of Boise on a proposed new library and a proposed stadium, a vote for a vote. But things took a turn this week when Ada County Clerk Phil McGrain stood before the council and said, well, hold on, it's not so easy.
Right, right. Yeah, and there's going to be a public hearing. Yeah, I tell you.
This a hearing, I think, coming this Tuesday.
Coming on Tuesday.
But what is that hearing about? Is it about just approving the proposed? What was on those petitions?
Right, exactly. Yeah. And it's a hearing to decide whether to accept those petitions to preclude that first vote. So the background is that to get something on the ballot for this advisory vote, you would have to have a vote to have a vote. So the voters would be asked, do you want to vote on the library project? And then people would vote yes or no. And then they would, if they vote yes, then the library project itself would come up for a vote. So this public hearing on Tuesday is to, and so they did get enough signatures on the petition to say, yep, we want to have a vote on whether to have a vote or not. But the city can have this public hearing and hear these folks and preclude that first vote and take it right to take the project itself to a public vote.
Which would simplify the whole process for all of us and be a lot less confusing, maybe not completely clear, but probably less muddy. On the other hand, the concern would be that once the city takes charge of that process, then the city officials would have the flexibility to change the language. And so the skeptics would worry that the city could rephrase things in a way to benefit them. And that's where Phil McGrain's kind of concerns came in. One of the complications is if you change very much, then you're going to moot the whole process. So it is horribly confusing, and I'm not sure that we're shedding a whole lot more clarity on the situation.
Well, and talking about the intent, one would have to assume that the petitioner's intent was to kind of take it out of the city's hands. Otherwise, they wouldn't go through this entire process in the first place. And it's not to say that the initial vote is simply a formality that would then be followed up on the second vote, because we occasionally see people vote for something to go on the ballot and then definitively vote against it. They just kind of believe in democracy. So, I mean, this would be seeing the process kind of play out probably in the way that the petitioners had intended.
Though I think some of them did back the notion of letting the city go ahead and take the step to kind of to speed the process along. They like the idea of having the substantial vote first and, you know, get rid of the preliminaries.
Okay, gentlemen. Here we go. You ready for a speed round?
Let's do it.
Speed boat, speed round.
Here's a news quiz here. Okay.
I've been out of town this week, so don't kill me.
No excuses here. You should get – this is pretty low-hanging fruit today, gentlemen. The University of Idaho sent a trademark infringement letter to a former student.
Vandal Beer.
Yeah. Coeur d'Alene, right? I think he's up in Coeur d'Alene. He's got a brewery, and he actually slapped a label on a beer that says Vandal Beer.
And he offered to help the school with some of his proceeds, and they didn't like that idea.
But also a missed opportunity for the University of Idaho. I actually talked to their fermentation program a little while ago about why they don't have a Vandal Beer, because they have a Vandal Wine, they have a Vandal Cheese. Why on earth don't they have a Vandal Beer when they actually have a brewing program there?
Boise has been approached, also Boise State, to have their own beer, and they denied that as well. And if you remember, there was a fight over Bogus Brewing wanting to be Bogus Brewing, and Bogus Basin didn't like that, so they become Boise Brewing. So fighting over beer is kind of a long and cherished tradition in this town.
Well, when we had Paya change a couple of beers back in the day because of a place in, I think it was Wisconsin, okay. That already had the names.
But I don't think University of Idaho students drink beer.
What? I
went there. Never had a drop.
I wondered why this guy didn't label his beer nasty and inebriated.
Ah, even better.
Stop. Boise mayoral candidate Lauren McLean said this week she would not take donations from
PACs.
Corporate
Corporate
donors. Yeah, corporate donors or corporate PACs.
Anybody who makes a profit. She'd take money from unions and other and other entities that are not profit oriented.
So interesting.
So what about a terrible business then?
And indeed, her history is
losing
that
money.
She has taken in her council races previously. She has taken corporate donations, right? But indeed, this is a shot across the bow.
I want to note that a couple weeks ago I predicted that the Boise Kind movement might take a hit with this mayoral election, and I noticed that Mayor Beater's campaign's response to this was not exactly very kind.
Well, okay. And I just also want to throw something out there that on a couple of years, I think the Trump Corporation didn't make money. So it's possible that maybe Lauren will get some donations from Trump.
Okay. I'm glad you brought this up because we are a cynical bunch.
We certainly are.
In our profession. But let's talk for a moment about Boise Kind. Indeed, tomorrow, Boise Kind Day, there will be nine grand service projects where people can pick up goat heads from the foothills or help out at the Gorongosa exhibit, prepare that at Zoo Boise, help with a food bank drive for the Idaho Food Bank. Can we talk about Boise Kind? The mayor is certainly embracing this. But I got to tell you, I mean, some of our brethren, we roll our eyes when we see Boise
Kind. I don't. Yeah. I think it's fine. I don't like the cynicism around it. I think any effort that you can promote to promote kindness and goodwill among your fellow human beings, I think, is a good thing. And I think the campaign is a good one.
Let me be both optimistic and cynical at the same time. I think people in Boise are kind. I think people in Boise do volunteer, and it's a lovely community. And I think people have the best intentions for the most part. That being said, I don't think you can brand behavior. I don't think putting a logo on something or any sort of governmental agency can really, outside of maybe taxing bad things, actually get people to perform certain behaviors or feel a certain emotion. So I think it's a way to feel good about what's going on in Boise, but I don't think it's really having much an effect on people.
I think Boise Nice is a real thing, and I don't want to be cynical, and I hope my eyes weren't rolling, but I don't know that you need a government to tell us to be nice. I think, you know, you're going to be nice or you're not going to be nice, and so I think that's where my kind of cynicism flag maybe gets waved a little bit when it becomes kind of a governmental initiative instead of just what it really is, which is the way people here are. And you don't know, you can't run into anybody who's visited Boise and not come away with the feeling that this is a great place to be because everybody's nice and everybody says hello and everybody greets you on the street.
But it's concrete. It's a concrete. They've got concrete things that they're doing. And it's also, you know, you've got a hashtag that goes out on Twitter, hashtag Boise Kind, and you'll see it where people will say, oh, this happened to me today, hashtag Boise Kind. And so it's a little bit of
the website is very impressive with very personal stories.
Right, right. Yeah. And so it's encouraging this kind of behavior. So it's not mandating or dictating that you are nice to other people, but it at least encourages it.
And okay. It's nice to celebrate that behavior, yeah. Too. Yeah.
Final question. Whose concert sold out earlier today? Whose Boise concert sold out earlier today?
I don't know.
Garth Brooks' second concert sold out today.
I think he's going to be something. I think you watch for him. He's going to be a big star.
You think?
Garth Brooks, yeah.
did the governor buy a couple tickets?
First.
Okay. Did the governor buy tickets just to push it over the edge to make that phone call worthwhile?
Boy, he better be there both nights as an opening act. Gentlemen, thank you. We'd like to thank our guests, Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Press, Seth Ogilvy with Idaho Public Television, Bill Manny with Idaho Public Television. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thanks, you too, George.
And we'll try to be kind, too.
Summer, George.
Thank you so much. A celebration of cultures comes to Boise this weekend. We'll talk about that next. You're listening to Idaho Matters here on Boise State Public Radio News.